Hi guys, welcome back to the Revive Stronger podcast. I'm your host, as always, Steve Hall, and today I have Dr. Mike back on the show, and we touch on Mike's social media rise and his growth strategy, so you're going to learn a little bit about that. Heels rising on leg pressing and squatting, is that an issue? What's Mike's nuanced take on that? The importance of context when trying to ask good questions and also to answer those. Why and how you can learn from anyone, including bro scientists, and whether or not Wesley Vissers is going to dethrone Chris Bumstead from the classic Mr. Olympia. You're going to learn all of that in today's episode, so do enjoy. And as always, guys, please, if you do enjoy these, make sure to subscribe, first of all, whether or not that's on YouTube or on the podcast provider that you're listening on. And if you can, give us a review, please do. A good review, please. That'd be very beneficial. And share it with anyone you think might enjoy it, whether or not that's also just taking a screen grab and sharing that over on social media. Tagging myself and Mike would be fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm always very grateful for everyone who does that. But without further ado, let's get into the show. So guys, we are back with Dr. Mike. It's always a pleasure to have Mike on the show. I know he's a very busy man. There's so much YouTube content always coming out, and I'm always just damn impressed because it's not just content for the sake of it. What's it? Quality over quantity, right? But when you've got both, sure, you get 1.5 million subscribers over on YouTube. So I just saw that being posted by Nick Shaw. So it's awesome to see that growth.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks. And, you know, you were the only person I would ever do YouTube videos with early on. And so I kind of had a much faster initial ride for the first, you know, 50K followers back in the day, because people were like, oh, I know that guy already. It wasn't just a cold start, which was super helpful. So that's
it's nice to know that there was something that I did to help at least the early days of Mike. We were the first Revive Stronger and Mike Samuels. Remember Mike Samuels? We were the first people to bring you for like a international seminar, right? Is that right? That's my claim.
I believe so. I don't. I don't keep track of those kinds of things in my head, but yeah, that seems reasonable. I think London in 2016 or something was the first one.
Yeah, so it's crazy to look back at that time and just see like the growth of where you've been. But it's like a lot of people probably, and this would probably frustrate you, Mike, where people be like, oh, why, how have you exploded? Where have you like how have you suddenly grown to something massive? And it's like, wow, there was a lot that you were doing with Juggernaut, like back in the day, and writing articles for them. There's certainly like this huge iceberg in terms of the underneath. There's a lot that people haven't seen, I think.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk about this any more than you do, Steve. I don't want to waste time with, we could be answering like real questions and stuff, but I guess like a part of it is I had a chance to talk to Chris Williamson after being on his podcast for the first time a while back, and he's such a nice guy, because after I was on his podcast, I was like, Chris, I don't mean to bother you, and please just tell me to fuck off if this is rude, but do you have any like one or two quick tips for like YouTube algorithm thumbnail type of shit? Because Scott, the video guy, and I were like, you know, looking into it. Scott was looking into it, but it's tough to figure out what works, what doesn't. And Chris was like, let's switch platforms, hit Zoom, hit record, because I got all kinds of shit to say. And I was like, I can just take notes, like, jot down. He's like, you're going to want a video of this. And he just like brain dumped for like 15 minutes. And it was like seeing the Matrix for the first time. It was like distinct answers to questions. He's like, this is the size of your face in thumbnails that seems to do best. This is how much text to put in thumbnails. And we're like, this is a thing people know the answer to. And it turned out that was true. And at roughly the same time, we started getting into the exercise scientist critiques type of stuff. And people really like those series. I had no idea people like that. I don't like critiquing people any more than I like doing anything else. As a matter of fact, I like it a little bit less, as it seems mean. Nowadays, when I introduce, I'm like, guys, all jokes, all in good fun. You know, that started to take off, and that those two things were a really, really big deal. And then Scott, the video guy, has been just pouring over analytics and experimenting and doing A/B testing, and that really helps figure out especially what does well and what doesn't do well, because I have an ability to talk about a range of topics, and not all of them are topics people want to hear about or approaches people want to hear about. So it turns out, like, for example, diet and lifestyle, people want to hear about it a bit from me. Every now and again, they like a video like that. But training for muscle growth, especially, is like something people just can't get enough of. And we see that directly in the views of the videos. So, like, let's might as well lean into this a little bit more. And so that kind of stuff has been instrumental. But to your point, Steve, you know, basically like more than a few folks have said, like, how do you make this much content? And I'm like, man, I went to school for this for fucking 10 years. And I sure hope I learned something, you know. And there's like, are there content creators who are, you know, in their early 20s or late teens that can pump out high quality content at this speed? Yeah, no doubt, but rarer, because they're just like, I didn't know what to say when I was that young. I had just not learned enough stuff. So I've just been learning and learning and learning and learning. And I've been a professor for a long, 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 long time. And then they're like, hey, just do this on YouTube and have a little bit more fun with it. I was like, all right. So like, I ran into like years ahead of ideas on videos we can make, ahead of what I can even make PowerPoints on. Several years ago, I was like 7 years ahead on video ideas. Now that we have a bit more tuned for quality, and not all videos are videos we want to put out, you know, it's a little bit more of a tighter fit, but still miles ahead of all the stuff I want to say versus stuff I have said. And the core reason for that is like, yeah, I went to school for a long time and I'm very involved in the industry. And also, I train myself, and probably one of the number one ways to get ideas about videos is like, I'll sit in the gym and come to a conclusion myself, usually a quite banal conclusion, really staying on your heels in a leg press is just way better than putting up on your toes. And I'm like, well, if I know that, this seems normal to me to know, but it seems like there are other people out there that just don't know that. And I also, when I scroll social media every now and again, I don't do a whole lot of that much anymore, but just getting other people's opinions about stuff, talking to people in the gym, you get an understanding of like, people think this, but the reality is this. And I'm like, well, that's a video. Like, another way to approach it is, if everyone out there knew everything I know about training and diet, they would be like 90% more correct and 10% more incorrect. Or 80-20, or 50-50, however much slack we do or do not want to cut me. Even if it's 90-10 the other way, the 90% more wrong shit, a 10% more right shit. That's at least 10% more right shit that people know that they didn't know before. And because I know a lot of stuff, because I've been at this a while, I went to school for a while, like, well, really, YouTube is just about pouring your knowledge into people. That sounded too sexual. You know what I mean. But it's all about just kind of saying, hey, like, these are things that I think are important that can help you make gains. Let's talk about them. Another thing is sometimes with the Teamful ROM forum, I get a lot of ideas from there because people ask me a question and I'm like, I literally just Google myself. Like, it sounds fucked up, but I YouTube search, you know, Dr. Mike or Israetel, and then the concept Israetel high reps. And like, when nothing compelling pops up, I'm like, fuck, I really haven't talked about this. And this is a good question. And a lot of times on Teamful ROM, I can answer questions like pretty succinctly, but sometimes like, oh man, there's basically like a conceptual framework. So for example, if someone were to ask like, how do I know if an exercise works well versus doesn't? Like, that's the SFR framework, right, Steve? But like, you don't simply just explain that in 3 seconds. You can, but people have a lot more questions than answers after that. And so I'm like, well, I need to make videos about this. Now, of course, I have multiple videos on SFR now, so I could just Google, copy, paste, check this video out, let me know if you have questions. And a lot of times they're like, fuck, there it is. But a lot of videos I don't have up and I get questions and I'm like, oh, fuck. That was kind of obvious to me what the answer was, but I sure shit never talked about it. So how the fuck are people supposed to know that that was my opinion on the matter? That's mostly how YouTube content works in my mind anyway. But fuck what I could just be lucky and just have like a weird looking face and the algorithms like you. People want to see your ugly face for some reason.
Well, there's definitely something to you as a person, because I know some very intelligent content producers and I just can't stay engaged with their content. So there's absolutely something to you leaning into you a bit more, which is awesome. Sure. To see, and that's nice too. And actually, I should dig into one of the things you actually mentioned there, because people might have heard it and it might have spiked up some people's ears, because I literally posted about this not long ago. It's something I changed my mind on, Mike. Was the heels lifting a little bit in some quad bias movements and not being as afraid to allow that to happen? You mentioned just there that maybe it isn't the best way to go. So I don't know if that's like practical experience that's driven you to that conclusion, or if you've got other reasons why you think it would go that way. Because yeah, it's something I kind of changed my view on, where I was like, hey, in a leg press or a hack squat, it doesn't happen so much in a hack squat, but I was doing it in the pendulum squat and I was like, hey, it's allowing me to get a bit more knee flexion. I don't feel like force is being produced less in that position. I feel strong there. It didn't feel like a problem. And because it's not like in a, say, free bar squat, my balance isn't going to be an issue. I can still produce force pretty well through that part of my foot. And the key thing there is, I think, probably being experienced, more advanced trainee, knowing my body well, only allowing a certain amount of heel lift versus excessive, all those things come into play too. But yeah, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that. And this is funny, I don't know if you're doing it now, but I know
I
when
am.
We used,
I'm
we used
writing. To, mm-hmm, go ahead, sorry.
When we used to do these, when we did our Q&As all the time, I know you'd literally be like, one moment, I need to make a note because I'm going to produce some content on this. So I'm loving that you did it just then too.
Yes, 100%. And this is exactly like what we literally just talked about. This is a clear illustration. So forgive me for looking like I'm being rude, but no, I was listening the whole time. I just had to write down. So eventually an RP video somewhere in some content format will come out about like, should you get on your toes and off of your heels during squats and leg presses and hack squats, for example, just, you know, pushing at leg exercises. And here's a perfect example of something that's an excellent candidate for a video instead of just a 3-second explanation. It's, of course, nuanced. And it really depends on what it is you want out of the exercise, and also your experience, and also the repetition range you're training in. So if you're doing heavy hack squats for sets of 5 to 10, I wouldn't get up on my toes. You can, and if it works for you, amazing, but that degree of instability at such ultra heavy loads does a couple things. One's it makes the movement significantly less safe because stability goes, something can happen, not good things. The other thing is that once you get on your toes, you are actually unable, because your body detects less stability, you're unable to produce ultra high forces. But the whole point of sets of 5 to 10 is to produce your ultra highest forces of hypertrophy. However, if you're doing sissy squats or leg presses for sets of 20 and your calf tendons don't hurt and your knees feel totally good coming up on your toes, it's a phenomenal way to train and it's fucking awesome and it's just right on. But the ultimate arbiter is how does it feel for you? If someone's like, dude, every time I come up on my toes, man, my knees feel not right. Everything fucking goes to hell. I swear to God, it's bad. I literally like, I feel a ping in my calf tendon. Like, I don't want to tear my shit up. Like, dude, fuck that. Don't do it. Stop right now. But some people are like, dude, if I slow and controlled, I get super extra depth, especially on terrible leg presses designed by terrible people who shouldn't be building machines, which is like what, Steve, like 95%. Yeah. There's the Arsenal leg press that's really good. I really just can't think of any other leg press that's really good offhand. I'm sure they exist. And they're, you know, the plate's all fucking angled wrong. And so there, it's like, yeah, you totally, like for sets of 15 to 20 with eccentric control, you absolutely can, especially at the bottom, get up on your toes a little bit. And like, that's one of those things where people have, instead of having nuanced reasoning, have categorical reasoning, or really just what I like to call jokingly a lot of feelings, where they're like, why are you lifting up off your heels, man? That's bad. It's like, what's that bad? In context, it can be bad for sure, but it's not always and everywhere bad. And if you're doing sets of 18 on the leg press and you just don't feel a ton of stress on your knees, when you come up on your toes just at the bottom, it feels just fine, but it fucks your quads up like crazy. Hey, awesome. But if you're doing sets of 8 on a hack squat and unintentionally you're coming up on your toes, you're just doing the movement wrong. And if we fix your technique so that you're pressing through heel and toe, you're going to feel stronger and more stable and recruit more musculature. You're going to do a set like that. You're going to go, dude, holy shit. Like, I changed my foot position on leg pressing about a year and a half ago because I was pushing a lot through my toes. My heels were nominally still on the platform, but with pretty much zero force transduction. Like, if you put like a mite or like a little cockroach underneath my heel, it wouldn't even get crushed. He'd just be sitting there like, I'm still good. I guess no pressure, no worries. And, you know, I was getting good quad hypertrophy and good results, but I felt like it was kind of like a similar feeling to leg extensions or sissy squats. It wasn't this deep contraction of the quads, like really in a super solid way that you feel from like heavy high bar squats, Smith machine squats, hack squats. I moved my feet up a little bit, turned my toes out a little bit, started pressing through the heels a little bit. Dude, I did like a couple sets of the leg press. First of all, I was able to put a plate extra on the machine. Now that by itself doesn't mean dick, because I could have put my feet up really high and done 18 plates or whatever, but I still got full knee and hip flexion. But every time I pressed up, my limiting factor wasn't like, oh, my knees feel weird. Cause you know, press really hard just off your toes for sets of like 12, like shit can feel funky and your body's like, don't go close to failure on this. I could drive close to failure and I felt so stable and strong. I just got gnarly, wicked, deep quad pumps, psychotic soreness, and like, oh, wow, I was lifting heavy loads. The progression was gnarly. My joints felt great. And I was like, okay, this was just clearly the right decision. It was biasing away from the toes thing. On the other hand, with sissy squats, for example, like the whole thing's on your toes. And you could look at that and be like, dude, something, you're doing something wrong. And it's like, no, I'm not. Like, yeah, it's not, I can't go heavy like this, but you know, sissy squats for my rep match sets of 20, have fun. You will feel the shit. And you can do that, you know, and I've actually done this. Crystal and I were visiting, we were flying through Los Angeles and we had like a fucking 9-hour layover. So we went to go to this gym and it's a regular 24-hour fitness or LA fitness or something. And the leg press there is like, you know, Steve, it's a fucking dumbass normal leg press. So I did a lighter weight, higher reps. And at the bottom of each rep, I came off 1 inch from my, this is in weightlifting shoes, by the way, I came 1 inch off of the bottom. And if I didn't do that, I would have gotten very little, much less quad movement, and I would just had less pump, less soreness, less all the good stuff. But I did that, and you know what, my calf tendons felt fine, everything felt great. Ideally, would the plate have been better positioned to where I could have put everything on my heels? Yeah, that would have been dope, but it wasn't the case. And I made the adjustment you're talking about, and it felt awesome. So there's like, there's sometimes a lot to say. And I think one of the ways that I kind of view our YouTube channel at RP is it's a spectrum of really simple shit all the way to pretty fucking complicated shit, though our member section is just full of deep science mumbo jumbo that no one's interested in except the couple of thousand people that are in there, fucking nerds, all of you. I mean, I'm in there too and I make the videos. So there's always that, but the average video is like, here's how to keep it really simple. P.S. here's the slightly more complex rationalization. And P.S. here's the slightly more nuanced take that will explain to people who really kind of already know what they're looking at, give them a little value. I try to target the videos around kind of the intermediate, but then mention to beginners, P.S. beginners, don't worry about this, or here's how you should think about this. And also advanced folks, here's a couple advanced considerations. Now, you and I both know, Steve, that everyone sits through the advanced part because they think they are slash want to be advanced, me included. But sometimes they make some sense out of it, sometimes they don't. But at the very least, like, I'll read technical papers in other fields because I'm a fucking nerd, and I'll read the basic part of the paper that makes sense to me, and I'll read the advanced part, and I'm like, I didn't understand that. But then I go back to the basic part, I'm like, okay, this I can at least take away. So anyone who watches our videos, there's a very high probability you're going to be able to take something away at your level. If you don't understand something, then there's a good chance that, like, don't worry about it, fuck it, like, it's all details and shit. And a couple more years of watching YouTube videos, watching your channel, Steve, learning, reading a bunch, doing 3DMJ and all that, they'll come back and be like, oh, that's what that meant, fuck, that's great. And then they're at a new level of content consumption, and then they can start to take deep dives and, you know, take Menno Henselman's PT course and all this other shit, which, like, Menno will say, like, yes, you, my course is great, but it starts off pretty hard and gets harder after that. And so it's one of those things where it's a tough thing in some sense to try to speak to the whole broad audience. So what I end up doing is kind of just shooting for the middle, making sure the beginners get at least something out of it, and making sure advanced folks also get something out of it. That's not every video, but that's kind of the average approach. I don't know if it seems to be working, but as a scientifically minded person, I have to remind myself, and Scott and I are on the same page, Scott the video guy and I are on the same page all the time. We think we know what we're doing, but we know for sure, other people think we know what we're doing. We know for sure we're guessing. They're educated guesses. How well educated are they? I don't know. I remember a really awesome Facebook post. This dates the shit out of this post, by the way, by Alex Viata. You know who Alex Viata is?
Sure do.
Super yep. smart guy. Yep. The ultimate athlete and
hybrid.
The hybrid athlete. Yep. And he said something really brilliant. He was like, business coaches, you know, biz dev coaches that are like, I'm going to take your fucking client coaching sales to a million or whatever bullshit they say. He's like, if you've had one successful business, you don't know shit. You could have just gotten lucky and just found your niche in the right way. You don't know anything. And I remember that stuck with me because there was a lot of people I knew, not personally, but in the industry, who were like, let me show you how to scale clients. Like, motherfucker, you've been doing this for a year and a half. Once you did it once. So we are trying our best at YouTube, but I never in a million years going to claim I'm fucking Mr. Beast or some shit like that, that I've got the whole thing figured out. Holy shit, this could have all been luck the entire time. It's unlikely that it's all luck. We do know some stuff, but then again, you know, people will ask, like, folks will be like, dude, can I, like, reach out to you? Can I do a consult with you about how to optimize YouTube? I'm like, that ain't me. That's not me. You know, Chris, Mr. Just watch a bunch of Mr. Beast videos. The really good thing is YouTube, and you probably know this, Steve, the Creator Studio has a video in the bottom right hand corner that's like for creators, and they talk about thumbnail optimization, and they talk about getting a little bit more views to your channel, how to build a consistent audience. The YouTube, one of the amazing things about YouTube is YouTube makes an unbelievable amount of money from creators posting on it. And so YouTube is insanely incentivized to help you do as well as possible. There, it's like YouTube is the owner of the football club, and we're all players on YouTube. Like, it wants you to get better, because if you get better, you score more goals and fans get in the seats and they sell more popcorn or whatever the fuck. Do they sell popcorn in the UK at football games or no?
I am the wrong person to ask. I don't go to enough games. When did I last go to a football game?
Those games, I think.
Yeah, well, so yeah, man, they probably don't actually sell popcorn. I don't think they do. We had them at cinemas though, right? Definitely happens at cinema. Not that I've been to cinema in a while. Maybe that's changed. So like, I'm just a social recluse.
Also guessing I'm just in this room. Movies, but even that, I'm not so sure about. Yeah, also totally unrelated. I'd love for if folks in the comments would slide in with their opinions. Is popcorn a worthwhile food for the macros?
I think it
Steve?
Can be.
Yeah.
It can be. When you're dieting, it can be all right, because it depends where you get it, right? So the macros can be really good if it's not got all the added fats and it's just maybe salt and maybe sweetened a little bit. You can get some pretty good macro-friendly popcorn. Yeah. And it's high fiber, right? But it's quite tasty, so it's like, it doesn't really feel like it's filling a hole, so it's not one I tend to go to, but some people love it. But not toffee
some
popcorn,
people love it.
Not for dieting. That's mass food.
No, for sure. Oh my God, dude, in the States, I don't know if you guys have this in the UK, but in the States, a typical, like, not a typical, but like, if you work for a corporation back in like the 90s, sometimes they would do like, they'd give like Christmas gifts or holiday gifts to their employees. And there's a couple of kind of traditional things, and one of them was this, I just get this all the time, a tin of popcorn that's like the size of your torso, and it's separated into caramel corn, regular butter corn, but like butter times a million, and then cheese corn. And I remember that shit hit, and I was like, holy fuck. And that is like, I didn't used to use marijuana when I was a child, but if you gave me one of those now, like post contest, and I was high, I'd be like, this is a terrible mistake. Call the hospital now. And they're like, call the hospital for what? Like, I'm going to explode. You just start eating the cheese corn, because cheese corn, you know, it's the cheese covering on it. I start eating it, there's not, someone physically will have to stop me from And then here's the fucked up part, Steve, because it's all three of these in the same tin, you get bored with the cheese, you need something sweet, caramel, you need something buttery, butter, and then you're like, ooh, what about cheese? And you just keep circling around the drain to obesity. Honestly, dude, America, really the Western world, we're really starting to perfect the obesogenic environment. Like, you want to get fat, man, it's just not that hard.
Yeah, I was going to say sweet and salty popcorn is not the best diet food, because you don't get that sensory specific kind of satiety. Like, you're not bored of it. You're like, change, yes. Change. That's great.
100%.
But I actually wanted to circle back to something you said there that I thought was brilliant with today's social media age, at least the way I feel about it. It's funny, I got a message the other day on social media, and it's essentially someone saying, I posted up my breakfast, which was like a smoothie and it had like fruit in and all these carbs basically. And they were like, hey, have you heard that savory breakfasts are meant to provide more energy later in the day? And it was from Glucose Goddess was her name over on social media. And it's like these people, I'm just like, oh wow. So she's a doctor and all this, she has these reasons why she thinks this is superior. But you mentioned there in terms of letting the heels rise, see how you feel. Like, you can test it out, see how it goes within certain parameters. And I was just like, I didn't want to get into the nitty gritty of all the like data and science and looking into her like podcast where she spoke about it all. I was just like, hey dude, try it out, go low carb for a breakfast, see if you have better energy later in the day.
Oh, she was
trying
the
other way. Yeah, low
savory,
carb breakfast.
Low carb versus sweet.
She
high
says
carb.
Savory, I this if she means, or
is she a
low carb
person?
I think she, yeah, Glucose Goddess. I don't know.
I mean, I could have interpreted that as high carb. To me, a glucose goddess is glucose. She comes down from the sky. I'm like, you got a candy bar? She says, nah, I got keto shit. I'm like, bitch, fuck out of here.
Savory, yeah, it could go keto either way. Goddess. I think it was low carb breakfast. It meant it'd be better for energy later in the day. But I was coming back to this point of, I think people are scared to try things. They want to have someone tell them the answer, and that's black and white. That's what I do. Great.
Yeah.
I'm sorted in my head. They don't want to try anything now.
I mean, I totally see where they're coming from at the same time as I totally see where you're coming from. Yeah, like I want answers, goddammit. I don't want to try shit. That's a fucking waste of my time, man. I 3 weeks of trying shit and I can't even tell which one's different. Some subtle physiological stuff you can't even tell. So like I just want some reason we have science. Like science is gonna try it for me, so I just have clear answers. So I totally get that. But science gives clear answers in two conditions. One, the margin of difference is detectable. And two, there are multiple studies coming at the problem from a variety of angles, including different populations, different variances, like how savory, how sweet is the breakfast, how many carbs, how few carbs. If there's really something there, 10 to 20 and more studies will start to paint a very clear picture of what's going on for the average person, but also obviously for the average person. So it's still, there's something to trying it. And the trying it is like, if you have to buy a squat, a hack squat machine or a leg press, you're not going to buy one, try it, it doesn't work, sell it, and then buy another one. That's fucking insane. That's huge upfront cost. But the upfront cost of eating a savory versus sweet breakfast is like, will you just do your grocery shopping differently 1 week than the other week? Is just an iPhone notepad notification away from you being able to do the easiest experiment in the world. And there also is so much context. It is there's such a nuanced point. So for example, first of all, I know almost certainly there is not enough data on this to make conclusive points on just science alone. This is not a very well studied aspect of like, is it low carb savory versus high carb sweet, what tends to provide more energy later in the day. Holy shit, that is a tough study to do to begin with, because how you measure energy in the day, is it a perceptive feeling? Is it a performance outcome? That means you need to have people sit in the laboratory. You have an ecological validity problem. All kinds of shit is a problem. Another one is like, what do you train? When do you train? When do you need energy? Another one is like, well, yeah, logically, if you eat a crap load of proteins and fats, the digestion and release is super, super slow. And so of course you'll have more energy later in the day because the shit is still digesting and still being absorbed and still providing you energy. But for carbohydrates, that, let's call it, you know, same protein, but super high carb, very low fat, it's going to dump into your GI tract much faster, but you'll have less energy later, right? Totally. Very, very reasonable. But also you'll have a lot more energy now. And so if you're eating a breakfast that you're like, okay, for 6 hours, I don't need anything after this. I'll have another meal after that. And then 4 hours later, then I train. Fuck yeah, low carb breakfast makes a ton of sense. The fuck do I need 80 grams of carbs for when I just go to work and sit at a computer? But if you have a diet where you train early in the morning before breakfast, and then you have a breakfast, high carb breakfast makes a lot of sense. And if you eat multiple times a day anyway, and you're also not the kind of person that struggles with daily energy, like some people just have plenty of energy. I haven't eaten too many diets that calorie controlled that I can tell a perceptive difference in energy experience. Like this is the same amount of number of calories and it's decently healthy food. I feel just about the same. And if you woke me up, if you gave me a drug that made me forget the last 6 hours of my life, and then you were like, just based on how you feel, what did you eat 4 hours ago? Unless it was like Taco Bell, I have no idea. And I have absolutely no idea. So sometimes people go based off purely theoretical work of like, look, if you have a ton of carbs early, you get the crash and then you fall off. For many people, that is in fact the case. And that's awesome. But it's not going to be like that for all people. So there, at the end of the day, science is great as a starter for like, here's a hypothesis that science has presented to you as pretty likely to be true on average. Then to your point, Steve, you still got to try it out. Because imagine the scenario. Science says low carbs in the morning are better for energy later. You try it, it just doesn't work. You try it again, it doesn't work. You go back to your pancakes and it's fucking unbelievable. Everything feels great. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna say? That's one of the reasons why I almost never say like one exercise is better than the other. If I do, I'm like, on biomechanical grounds, it's better. In my experience, it's better. For most people, it's better, but you gotta try it. And if it's not better for you, I have dick to tell you. Like if you're doing cable curls and I thought Bayesian curls are better, you're doing regular cable curls, I just feel these better, I'm never gonna say anything about it again. So did you really try Bayesian curls? Yes. Well, then, dude, we're all different, super, super different contexts. So trying to look for real categorical things like that to begin with is awesome because you can really save a lot of time. Like if someone's like, hey, you should eat plenty of protein to gain muscle. And you're like, well, hold on. I'm going to try a little bit of protein. I'm going to try a lot. You're like, dude, I can save. Fine. It's going to 3 months of your life of gaining no muscle is going to be the cost for that. But especially if it's something perceptive, like how much energy you feel later in the day, man, you can figure that out for yourself pretty fucking quickly. And the other thing is, many breakfasts are not high carb, low fat. Many breakfasts are moderate carb, moderate fat. And then what? That's actually probably the best way to feel the most energy later in the day. And here's another retort to that. We just like, when you have no energy later in the day, you just eat again and more energy comes on in. So there's so much to say there, but yeah, for some people, lower carb can basically be digested slower because of the fats, and then you can have more energy later in the day. But I think a lot of people are looking for, like you said, categorical, like this, I eat this because it gives me more energy. I eat this because it gives me less energy. And believe it or not, there's not even a rich literature on how foods affect energy perception, because calorie for calorie, most people can't tell the difference. They just can't, unless when you're hypocaloric, not getting carbohydrates distinctly makes you have less energy. That's the exception. But then again, if you have low carbohydrates on a hypocaloric diet, but plenty of fats, you get low energy, but it's a very smooth level of energy throughout the day. You don't have these ups and downs. And some people like that better. So, I mean, I think I don't want to talk shit on Glucose Goddess. I have no idea who she is. And maybe her point's 50 times more nuanced than even this. But, you know, lower carb in the morning means you have more energy later is something that can have a ton of validity to someone who like has a Pop-Tart for breakfast. And they like don't understand why 3 hours later they're struggling. But dude, if you have a handful of nuts instead, it's going to be smooth sailing for the next 4 to 6 hours. There's tons of validity there. But does that mean that in most cases or every case, especially in people who train with weights, regardless of what your schedule is like, that lower carb in the morning is categorically better than higher carb for energy later? Absolutely not. Not even close. Not by a mile.
Do you not see the progress you would like? Are you sick of writing your own programs? Or perhaps you need some accountability in order to stick with a plan? Then it's time to start working with us. We at Revive Stronger offer a truly personalized coaching service. You'll get more than just an email with some macros or random cookie cutter program. With Revive Stronger, you will be the center of our attention. You will receive your own fully individualized training protocol alongside a customized nutritional strategy. We create the coaching around your needs, wants, personal preferences, and your own unique lifestyle. Every single week, we delve into your program in order to make appropriate adjustments so that we get the most out of your time and the best possible outcome. We help both female and male athletes to seriously change their body composition by adding more muscle mass and decreasing fat tissue. No matter if you're a competitive bodybuilder or just want to look better, if you need help with your progress and taking your physique to the next level, our coaching is for you. It's time to make a change. Sign up today and let's revive stronger.
I love how you framed that, because that was the lack of framing I provided with like, try it, was it was like, try it when you're in a range of acceptable things to try. Like Science, like you said, points in a direction and gives us decent ranges most of the time and parameters to be within there. That's where the individual difference could be. So I love that you kind of went through that. And the exercise selection one is a brilliant one, and one that frustrates you and me in terms of, hey, this is the best quad exercise or whatever it is. It's like, hey, it could be until this time, whatever.
Yes, until you do it for 16 weeks and then you're like, I hate this. And it's like, still the best. Sorry, you're just going to have to hate it for the rest of your life. Another thing I hate, and when I answered this on Chris Williamson's show, I told him I hated doing this. If you can only do one exercise for the rest of your life, I'm like, I'm sorry, what am I in a fucking desert island? Am I in prison, but they consult me for what equipment I want in the prison cell? I don't understand what the fuck is going on. Why are we even doing this? It's like asking someone on a podcast, some like nutrition metabolism expert, you get Stefan on, and you're like, what is the best food for energy? He'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? If I say it's kiwis, are you only going to eat kiwis the rest of your life? What are you, crazy? Like, that kind of stuff to me is, you hear people out. The best way to listen to that kind of advice, like this is the number one thing, is like, that's a cool idea to try and put in my little bag of tricks. But if you think like, that's it, search is over, this is the only exercise I'll never need, that is an insane idea that makes as much sense as saying, pasta with red sauce, only food I'll ever need to eat the rest of my life. I'm good. It's like, but what if you get sick of it? Nope. It's just the right answer. Like, okay, you're just going to burn out of the diet. Same way people are like, so squats are better than leg presses, right? Like, depending on your measurement, sure, for half a year. And then afterwards, your knees hurt, your hips hurt, and you hate training because you hate squatting. And then leg presses are objectively better. So people just forget about variation entirely. And they also forget that most gyms have multiple pieces of equipment that you can use. And so looking for the one, I think people sometimes feel overwhelmed and they feel anxious and they want someone to just like clear the table and give them, this is the right answer to follow. And that costs a very little cognitive bandwidth, but it also provides very little value. And so with just a bit more cognitive bandwidth, you can teach people, here's how you can tell for yourself if an exercise is really awesome. And it's probably going to be 5 to 10 exercises that are pretty great. And if you use one for a while or two for a while, they're going to get a little stale, you can switch. That's like, you know, 10 times more cognitive bandwidth, but it maybe has 100 times more yield on decision-making process later in life. Because one thing all criticisms are valid here for me being an egotistical piece of shit. But one of the things I'm a little proud of myself at times for kind of spreading the message on is the stimulus to fatigue ratio framework. Because if you know it, once you know it, and I see this people at Team Full ROM, we see this in tons of your followers, Steve, the what exercise should I do for this is not a question they ever ask again. You never need to ask that question again. And a lot of times it seems like people are being rude in the Team Full ROM forum or in like some of the comment sections, but someone will be like, hey, like squats or leg press. And they go, try both, see what your best SFR is. And there, you know, that does require more thinking, but not that much more. It's almost like saying like, hey, like, should I wear like, you know, Gymshark gear or Younglock gear, you know, for my gym clothes? And if someone could give you all kinds of answers, but the real answer is like, well, you've tried them? Which fit do you like? Because it could be you wear Younglock for a bit and get sick of it and you buy the other brand. You could get, you know, the what's it called, Gymshark, and just love it forever and never look at Younglock again. There are so many possibilities. You got to try it and you have to know what you're looking for. Because just trying it is like, okay, so what's the answer? Like, I'm wearing Younglock. Am I cool yet? Am I getting blowjobs yet? And the answer is like, okay, so there's at least two things you have to consider with the clothing. At least two things, or probably more. One is, how do you think you look? Do you like how you look? If the answer is yes, hey, you're halfway there. The other is like, how do you feel in the clothes? Like, how do they fit? Because if it's a comfortable fit and you think you look good, mission accomplished. But also the variation thing. This is a like almost universal rule. You love Younglock, you wear their shit all the time. But you're like, man, I saw some fucking shit by Gymshark. It looks awesome. I want to buy it. You buy it. It's great. And then you go through a phase where you just wear mostly Gymshark for a while. But then you get tired of it and you go back to Younglock. It's like this in so many areas. And so many people know that and are awesome about making the right choices for themselves. But still other people, especially new folks to fitness, they don't know that. So they go in and like, what's the right thing to choose? I literally heard, I was listening to a podcast where they were interviewing a super crazy special forces operative in the US military. And the guy goes, what's your favorite gun? And he was looking for like a manufacturer and brand, like, you know, the M4 or something like that, right? Now, the guy answered, he goes, my gun, because the guy had a completely custom setup for his primary shooting weapon, right? And also classified, so he can't tell you what it is. and it wasn't like a brand, it was his gun that he rigged together and essentially built himself. But also that question misses out on the fact that like, favorite gun for what? Like for breaching a door, for taking shots from 500 meters out, for close quarters when you've run out of all your other guns? There's no such thing as the best gun. It is an impossible question to answer. Steve, what's the best car? The fuck does that mean? To go shopping with your kids? Volvo is nice, the station wagon. To go fucking Lambo. Picking up pussy in the middle of London, Lambo. Well, I do everything. The real answer is the Lambo is the best for everything, yeah. But that's a bit of an exception.
Speed bumps, maybe. Yeah. Oof.
Driving it anywhere other than perfectly paved roads, parking it anywhere other than your own private lot. Yeah, the Lambo turns out as a useful car to be just purposeless. I remember I was watching a documentary about exotic cars, and the vice president of marketing for Bugatti was being interviewed, and he goes, most cars are A to B cars. You take your car from your house, you go to the store. The Bugatti is an A to A car. you take it out from your house, you drive it around, and you come back home because it's the experience. It's like, he's basically tacitly admitting the car is fucking useless other than as a toy. And it's like, so someone asks, what's the best car? What's the best food for energy? What's the best type of gun? All you have to do is introduce them to the nomenclature and the topography of the environment which they're considering and being like, here's a couple things you might be looking for. Here's how to tell. And here are some really good guesses as to what's probably going to do better and what's probably going to do worse. And go. Now the rest is up to you. And there's really kind of no terribly wrong answers there, as long as you understand what it is you're doing. Like, how do you tell what the best gun is for a job? Well, can you put rounds on target accurately and, you know, in a timely manner? Then it's a pretty good gun. Like, you know, if someone's like, okay, it's 600 meter out target, you have like a pistol, you're like, ah, shit, did I throw it? Like, you're not going to hit anything with that. But if it's a sniper rifle and you're trying to like corner around doors and stuff, like someone's just going to grab the fucking end of your rifle and hit you in the face and that'll be that. So it's it's tempting, Steve. It's super tempting to want completely correct, totally non-nuanced answers, because those answers are categorically better than nuanced ones. They are. One absolute correct answer is fucking unbelievable. I want it too. But in order to get those kinds of answers, you have to ask very specific questions. One of the ways I think about it is, if you think of truth value in the universe as a certain amount of information, if your question is teeny tiny, like what's the best gun, the amount of information is still the same, so I have to fill the rest out for you. Well, nuance, consideration, blah, 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 tactics, environment, blah, blah. So it's like your question was one sentence long. My answer is 50 sentences long. But if you're like, hey, listen, I have a show coming up, leg presses kind of hurt my knees, blah, 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 and you give me all this detail, I can actually just answer with hack squat for sets of 10 to 15. Brilliant. It's the same amount of data, but if you provide me very little, I have to provide you a lot to be like, there's a lot of shit to go here. It's almost, here's another analogy on that. I was going to say crossword puzzle, that's totally a maze, you know, like a maze you fill out in the back of a newspaper or whatever. You know, like how do you get from point A to point B? If you've gotten 80% of the way through the maze that has provided me lots of context, I'm going to be like, turn right, turn left, and the maze is over. If you're like at the beginning of the maze and you're like, which way do I go? I'm like, okay, well, here's 50 instructions of where to turn. You're like, oh man, isn't there something simple? Like, well, no, you just have to make a lot of turns still because you haven't gone through the maze hardly at all. There's just more options. So, you know, like I'll sit next to people, this is my perennial example here, but I'll sit next to someone on the plane and you'll get to talking. And they're like, what's the best workout routine? And I'm like, fucking Christ, you better be ready for an hour long lecture about what is your goal? What is your purpose? What is your background, et cetera, your limiting conditions. But if they're like, look, I'm doing bodybuilding workouts and I really like them, but I want to incorporate strength training, here's kind of my routine, what do you think I should do? Be like, oh yeah, add a couple sets of 3 to 6 of bench and squat on these 2 days and you're good. That's a very simple answer. The total amount of information is roughly the same. And I think what people want is to come with very little information and get very little information back that's just like the right answer. And maybe a super intelligent AI can do that for us at some point, because it can interpolate everything we fucking forgot to say. It can read our minds. But until then, if you want very simple answers, you're going to have to understand some complex framework about your own situation and about the environment. If you want complex answers, you can just be like, what's the meaning of life? And then fucking Christ, but I can write a whole goddamn tome. You have to write a tome. Be like, well, to answer the meaning of life, I have to describe to you the biological and systemic evolution of the universe. Ready? And be like, what? That sounds like a college course. Like, yeah, you're going to have to go through a few college courses to understand the meaning of life. One quick sentence question, huge answer.
Reproduction. That's all it is. That's what I've been told. So anyway, I was going to say, your chat there really was very interesting, thinking about the social media landscape and how I see some people with this very kind of black and white short answers. It's very simple why they explode in growth. But I think then they maybe plateau and don't get very far because people listen to it and they're like, ah, that didn't work for me. And then they hopefully some people will just give up because unfortunately people do that. Then they'll dig further and they'll get to someone like yourself, Mike, who is much more nuanced, and they'll start craving that. So I know for me now where I am in my life and my journey of like physique development, if someone isn't nuanced, I just ignore them completely.
Right.
Whereas other people ignore the nuanced person, like a Brad Schoenfeld. Like he'll post something and people will be like, you didn't give us any answers. That's a really wide range. Like, come on. I thought science was going to provide answers. And they just go to someone, some bro who has got pretty jacked. And it's like, yeah, the squat for your quads. Come on, let's go.
Yes. And I have no problem with that kind of bro advice as long as it's kind of in the middle of the nuance distribution. We say, like, look, if someone says, like, the answer is sets of 15 for hypertrophy, I don't hate that answer. Especially if there's a couple of different ways to be a bro. And probably my favorite is when guys say, hey, this is what works for me. They explain it and they go try it. I love every part of that. Because they never said it was going to work for you, motherfucker. They say, or what I like to do is XYZ. Any bro in the world is an accumulation of a ton of implicit wisdom because they've already tried a bunch of stuff and they've had lots of success and lots of failure. So when they tell you what I like is XYZ, there's a deep kernel of fucking gold in that motherfucker. But if you assume that what they mean is this is also going to be your exact correct answer, that's a big fucking problem because that's not what they said. Some bros, which I wouldn't call bros, people who have only bro experiences and bro educational backgrounds and bro levels of nuance, but anoint themselves to the position of I know the right answers for pretty much everybody, and they're simple answers too, and they're exact answers. Then you have a problem because none of that is true. And I think you can learn from almost anyone with the right context. And I mean almost anyone, because sometimes what you learn from a person is, well, I tried what they said and it didn't work for me. So now at least I know that doesn't work for me. You know, there's 100 things that could have worked. You could at least X it out. Now it's 99. Better than just not knowing anything. Someone's like, hey, tricep kickbacks with dumbbells. You're like, that at least I know is not a good exercise for me. I still don't know what my good exercise is, but that ain't it. So you can save yourself some time. And as you accumulate more wisdom coming through bodybuilding, you're eventually going to know a lot of stuff that works for you and doesn't work for you. Not certainly, but to a high degree. And some of it will be very much like what other people said in the past. You're going to come back around to, yep, high bar squats really are king. Amazing. And some of it will be like quite different from what other people have liked. And it works for you. And that's awesome. And so it's just, there's nothing wrong with simple advice that is personal experience based, as long as the person communicating it, and importantly, the person receiving it, understands it as that kind of advice. And there's nothing wrong with nuanced advice, as long as people understand that, like, you're going to have to learn some shit and think about it for a while for this to make sense. But once you do, it's going to make way more sense than simple advice and give you way better answers. Someone could say, like, you know, what makes a car run? It's fucking simple, bro. Steering wheel, engine, wheels. Like, yeah, that's not wrong, but it also tells me almost nothing. Now, if you want a nuanced understanding of what makes a car go, you're going to have to look at a Tesla or a General Motors Hummer, the new electric Hummer. You're going to have to, like, go into the CAD design software and hit the expand mode where it blips the whole car out into its 10,000 components. And you're like, there's your answer. You're like, well, I don't understand any of that. Like, well, actually, it is impossible for you to understand how a car works because you don't have a master's degree in mechanical engineering. But if you did, holy shit, you could understand the stuff. And it also matters, like, what level of knowledge do you want to know? If you want to know, like, I want some good exercises to try, fucking easy. Anyone can tell you that. And that's great. It could be great advice. Whereas if you're like, I work with clients, I'm a high ticket client kind of guy, I want to deeply be able to understand how to diagnose exercise overlap, exercise benefit for my clients, and how to really, really rig the process to fine tune it to make sure they're getting the most. You just got to go to school for a long time to be the best version of that. And nothing you're going to learn from some TikTok reels is going to teach you how to do that shit. Like asking a kindergarten teacher how the body works. We eat food and we breathe air, and then we poop out food and we breathe out other air, and that's what makes the body go. Not wrong. And then you ask a medical anatomist how the body works, and it's like, which answer do you want? He drops like three books from the Oxford Library. Each one has 1,000 pages, like, ta-da. Like, oh shit. Well, you know, if you want to be a surgeon and you want to open up people's bodies, fix things in there, close them back up, you're going to have to know a lot of shit. They ain't no TikTok reel for you. But if you're a kindergartner, you know, you can learn a lot by, like, you know, muscles move and bones, I was going to say erect the body, but this is clearly why I'm not a kindergarten teacher or allowed around children.
You didn't specify what part of the body, so we're just going to go with the body. But
the
I think
whole
actually,
body. Whole body hope, erection.
That you'd hope that leads to it. At least I think my journey was like that. Like initially, basic knowledge was all I needed, could digest that. Then I kind of plateaued. Then I had to dig deeper, learn a hell of a lot, experimented a lot. And it's taken a while to kind of get to this point. That's why I think a lot of people, they don't see maybe just this linear progression in terms of muscle growth, but it's like spurts of they learn themselves better or they find yes. Mike's Rattel and Renaissance periodization. They get a spurt of growth or whatever it is. Sure. So I'm going to flip the script though, Mike, because I wanted to ask this question because it was on my mind from last time. Because the last time we were on, we were talking about, and this was episode 392, if anyone wants to listen back to it, but we're talking about the Olympia because you've just been there. As Chris Bumstead obviously won the classic division. And we've just had Wesley Vissers now win the Arnold, the last two Arnolds that have gone ahead. And I think we had the discussion of like, is Chris ever going to be beat? So I wanted to ask this question because I'm just interested to see what you think of Wesley versus Chris, if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh boy, man. So two days ago, I was on a 3-hour podcast on Bro Chat with Fuad and friends. And I was like, I sort of got my legs fell asleep towards the end, but super fun time. And towards the end, they did a lot of like a round table, who's going to place at which show ahead of who. And I like said a few times, I was like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about in this regard. I guess I'll just answer this in kind of like the intellectual way. I can also give a simple answer. And the intellectual answer is a couple things that come to mind right now. One is conditioning. Who brings that extra crispy? Because if you have someone that's extra crispy and someone who's just in good shape, extra crispy is exponentially better. It's a real, you know this, Steve, I'm preaching to the choir. A lot of people don't know that. And they're like, they'll see Bum has great shape, but how did he take second? He's, you know, unlikely that he'd take second, but if he does, you just say, well, look at his glutes. And they're like, look good to me. Like, yeah, but you just don't know what you're looking for, right? Hadi Chupan, actually a really great example. In the last Olympia, Hadi Chupan versus Derek Lunsford. To me, when they turned around and did rear double bicep, I was like, Derek Lunsford is your new Mr. Olympia. It's completely. And then when Hadi's fans got really butthurt or whatever, understandably so, probably the more intellectual of his fans, the new bodybuilding competed, they were probably like upset, but they probably weren't talking about it much because they were like, yeah, I could have told you he fucking lost because his glutes were awesome. Just a little watery, enough for an idiot like me to notice. And then of course the fucking Steve Weinberger is going to fucking notice, head judge, you know, like that's it. It's lights out, over. So if Wesley has been bringing some fucking psychotic conditioning lately, and if Chris is off, yeah, man, there's a conversation there for sure. Now, Wesley does have a structure that he can pose around very well because his posing is a fucking absurd, super high level. But he does have that Arnold problem where he's a big dude and he's got big hips and not big by human standards, but by the best classic bodybuilders in the world, Wes is a big guy. And so on just sheer aesthetics of proportion, Bumstead is insanely difficult to beat because holy fucking action figure Ken Doll Christ, that's like, how do you improve that? Very difficult. And Chris also just really never misses with conditioning. Now, the ultimate thing, the last thing I have to say, so that's a couple things. Last thing is, it's tough until you stand them next to each other. And this is something we talked about on Bro Chat for a while. We talked about two things. One, you have stage shots of one guy and stage shots of another guy. It tells you something, but not much because they're not together in the same shot. The other thing is gym shots to stage shots. Is literally for bodybuilding enthusiasts at a high level, a total fucktarded waste of time. Because in the gym, you could look like the next Mr. Olympia. On stage, you could look like what the fuck happened to you, and vice versa. A guy in the gym hasn't pulled any estrogenic compounds out yet. He's in like fucking 5 D-ball tabs an hour. You're like, that guy looks whatever. He looks whatever. He shows up to the show and his glutes are like fried, like someone like a waffle maker. And you're like, what the hell? Like, well, yeah, you had 2 weeks to do that. He does that every time. You didn't know? Sean Clarita doesn't even take his clothes off until he gets to the Olympia. You ever seen him train on Instagram? He's like wearing 8 hoodies because he doesn't want to show off what he's got because maybe he's holding a lot of water from just the prep part of the show. That's what happens. Or it's like psychological warfare, who knows? So there's also that element that you have to consider. And so I've seen amazing stage shots of Wesley from the Arnold, And I've seen, obviously, tons of Chris Bumstead, but the big thing here is stand them next to each other. And then it's going to start to be like, okay. So if, for example, they both competed at the Arnold and Chris won and Wesley took a close second, speculations about what happens at the Olympia are much, much more informed. But until they stand next to each other, any confident speculation is insane. And it's funny too, because you'll get fans of people that proclaim things with certainty that even the bodybuilder themselves wouldn't say. I bet you if you pulled Wesley and Chris aside, be like, do you, real talk, like aliens are here, we're all in ultimate paradise, there's no point in competing anymore, you can let your ego down, do you have 100% certainty you're going to win the next Mr. Olympia? And neither one of us is going to tell you yes. They're going to be like, well, I don't know, I sure hope so, but I don't know. Whereas like some random fan on Instagram is like, it's it, man, Wesley Visser's 2024 Olympia champ. And listen, Wesley and I have corresponded on Instagram before. I haven't with Chris, though he seems like a great guy. And like, Wesley's the fucking man. And he trains with like Team Full Round principles, basically RP principles. He's a gorgeous physique. He's a fucking awesome guy. I hope as a human, he wins the Olympia. And but also Chris Bumstead, by all accounts, is fucking also great. So I can't even bring myself to be like a fan of either one of them in a spiritual sense. Yeah. I just hope people, to me, every person top 10 on the classic physique stage is a literal work of art. Like, yeah. Like Terrence Ruffin, there, like I could have a, this sounds fucking weird, but I could have a picture of his physique full blown in my office and I'd be like, this is what every bodybuilder up to this point wanted to look like this and just fell short. This is art, this is God. And so when he takes third or fourth or fifth, I don't give a fuck, he's flawless. And so all the guys are fucking flawless, like Michael DeBoul or whatever his name is, when he turns around and his glute striations have glute striations that have their own stroller carriage baby glute striations, you're like, what the fuck is that? It's a miracle. And so who's going to win is less of a conversation to me than like, damn, I just hope a lot of people show up in shape so we can just have this unbelievable display of human perfection. That is the long answer. The short answer is you don't bet against the champ. And that's just a statistical thing. The incumbent usually wins. The person who is already the champ usually wins. And bodybuilding, interestingly enough, like many sports, has a huge element of dynasties and streaks. Dorian, Ronnie, Jay, Phil, etc. People win oftentimes. They win much more often over and over than they do one at a time. Chris Dickerson won the Mr. Olympia back in 80 or some shit like that. And he just won it once. Dexter Jackson just won it once. Very unusual. Most Olympias win it multiple times. And Chris Bumstead is so dominant physically that can Wesley knock him off? Absolutely. There's a world in which that happens. How many other? Here's the thing. Last thing I'll say before I shut up. Part of this conversation, low-key, and I'm totally joking, but is low-key offensive to people like Ramondinho and all the other guys that like have outplaced Wesley at every single show except for the last Arnold. These are the guys he's going to have to burn through again, and he's only done it once. And like, what about those guys? You know, he's going to have to beat them too. So it's trippy when you get two guys in the conversation and all the other guys are like, what the fuck? What about me? And it's super, super valid. So, you know, if I had to put money on it, which I would never do, I would say 80-20 Bumstead, just because he's Bumstead and he's the returning champ and his structure and conditioning is fucking terrifying. But can Wesley knock him off? Yes. And is Wesley's physique absurd at every level? I mean, it's a work of science fiction. I think it's a, if I saw Wesley Visser at the gym live and I didn't know who he was, I would promptly put down my VersaGrips, walk out, and never come back to the gym again. Like that, fuck that, fuck that. This guy already reinvented the shit. I'm just some kind of just aberration on what a real god looks like. It's just wild.
I like your breakdown there, Mike, and I appreciate the final comments as well, because I do think that's important. Like, everyone who goes to the Olympia is like the top of the top. They're the best of the best. Everyone on that stage is
people
unreal.
On Instagram be like, yeah, man, what's his name look like? Shit, shut the fuck up. You would be on your knees in front of that dude. Yeah. You wouldn't even, notice you. You're nothing and no one, and he's a god. He was born perfect, and you were born flawed, and you'll never be real compared to him. Shut up. It's like when people criticize, like, NFL football players or, you know, like, premier team, kickers and stuff. Like, this guy sucks at football. Like, what? Are you crazy? He's better than you at every sport you've ever played. And soccer, you fucking asshole. That's just me getting mean.
But it's true. And I actually agree with your breakdown. I think if Chris is off, then Wesley could be there. But Wesley does have those structural things that he poses around, but they are still apparent. And it's true with Ramon, particularly because he was off and his posing still isn't amazing. Yes. So if he ups, he was in condition, had amazing posing, he's going to challenge for those top spots still. So yeah, it's definitely a conversation.
And you can't really pose around the mandatories. That's another thing. In the classic poses, Wesley's a killer. In the mandatories are designed to expose your actual structure. You can't run from it. And that's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, I know that all too well. Anyway, Mike, I've had you for an hour now, and I appreciate all your time. I'm going to have to bring you back on when I next can, because in usual fashion, I enter down a road, and then we have a great conversation, and we don't get to the questions. I have a bunch of questions, which will probably take like four episodes to cover. We'll get to them eventually.
I love it.
They're good questions, so it'll happen. I appreciate you taking the time, Mike, and everyone for listening, and the question askers as well. We'll get to them eventually. So cheers, guys.
Steve, thank you so much for having me on.
Losing weight fast while maintaining muscle mass. Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? It isn't though. It's reality, and we know how to do it. And we will help you achieve this. The Minicut Movement is an 8-week fat loss program to make you lose a huge chunk of fat while maintaining muscle mass at the same time. We will support you from the beginning to the end so that you see the results you would like to and come out of it much stronger. You'll receive a fully automated spreadsheet that is based on your nutritional needs. You can choose between 6 different male and female training templates. Over 30 videos will guide you through each and every single step of the Minicut so that you're getting the most out of your journey and that you always know what to do. But the best thing is that you can start whenever you want. The Minicut Movement is open 24/7. So if you want to learn more or you're ready to sign up, hit the link in the description below. So let's revive stronger together.